Welcome back to another episode of Life Unleashed. Today, we're going to talk all about the fear-free movement with Dr. Marty Becker. You're not going to want to miss it. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm so excited to be introducing my guest today, Marty Becker. Known as America's veterinarian, Dr. Marty Becker has dedicated his life towards better health for pets and their pet parents. He is the founder of the Fear-Free Movement, which provides unparalleled education on the emotional well-being, enrichment, and reduction of fear, anxiety, and stress in pets. Marty, welcome to the show.
You know what, Sarah? We're good friends for many years. I'm looking at myself on this screen and thinking I should have taken better care of myself. I'm just turned 69 years old, and all that rock music, all that working on tractors, it's taken its effect on me, I'll tell you.
What I love is just how long we've known each other. You've written the foreword for one of my books. I became a fear-free board member when it first started out. Before you even branched into trainers, I was there utterly fascinated, utterly excited about the real effect you're having on not only America, but on the world, to understand that the pets have feelings, that pets, the number one thing pets want is to feel safe. And it's not just at their home, which I think of as a den, it's just everywhere, whether they go to the groomer or whether they go to the veterinarian. There's so much you can do as a veterinarian or a pet care professional to make them feel safe. And this is so much of what I want to talk to you about today, because Fear Free has been around for a long time, right? I'm holding your book here, From Fearful to Fear Free, which has always been a Bible to me and a wonderful book, even for newbie pet owners. You know, you target veterinarians, but everybody should read this book. There are wonderful lists, there's wonderful stories, and you just did a beautiful job.
Well, you know, it's been 13 years since I had my life changed. I'm a veteran veterinarian and a lifetime pet lover, and was up in Vancouver Island in Victoria in 2009. And Dr. Karen Overall, the Board of Veterinary Behaviorists, was going to give the keynote. And I caught her attention on the way in and said, you know, can't wait to hear your talk. And then honestly, I couldn't wait to leave, because I was going to go get myself a nice cold Canadian beer, meet my wife early for supper, and have my life changed. Her first sentence was, fear is the worst thing a social species could experience, and it causes permanent damage to the brain. She went on to explain that behavior produces a physiologic response, so behavior is medicine. She talked about fear is caused by something painful or something disturbing. So you trim a pet's nails too short, that's painful. Now they see the nail trimmers, that's disturbing. A syringe, if you think of a veterinary hospital, blood draw, vaccination, injects a long-acting antibiotics, all painful. Now when they see the syringe, that's disturbing. And then she went on to describe how dogs and cats are all the equivalent of a one-year-old child. They're taken against their will for healthcare, she called it. They have no idea why a procedure benefits them. How does looking in my ear that is raw as a, red as a fire pit benefit me? How does looking at my gums that look like a flamethrower went across it benefit me? How does giving me this vaccination benefit me? And number four, they can't flee the threat. So if you think of, let's just talk about a dog with a vaccination versus a human. So if a human gets a COVID vaccine or flu vaccine, you go by free will. You know why it benefits you. You have a sense of time, so you know the whole thing is maybe 30 minutes door to door, and the vaccine, the prick itself is only 5 seconds, and then I got to wait 15 minutes to leave. And then at any time, if I get terrified, I either don't go to begin with, or I can leave at any time. And so the pet, on the other hand, taken against their will, don't know why the vaccine benefits them, don't have no comprehension of time.
They don't even feel good.
No. They can't understand the relief of fear, anxiety, and stress, even if it's moments away, and they can't flee the threat. So what happened after her talk, and I want to be clear here, Board of Veterinary Behaviors had been talking about this for a long time. Some trainers have been talking about it for a long time. But I thought, along with most of the veterinary profession and other trainers and groomers, that it was collateral damage. That, yeah, we love animals. Yeah, we're compassionate to animals. And this is just something we have to deal with. And there were people like Sophia Yen who pioneered pieces of this. But what I was able to do was go back to boarded veterinary behaviorists and animal handling experts such as yourself and figure out, here's how you actually do it, and develop these protocols. Right. And I know, you know, we have 256 people on the Fear-Free Advisory Group, such as you, Sarah. The only person, and I say this, I think you'll understand when I say this, the only gifted person that's like, wow, is Temple Grandin, who's on the Fear-Free Advisory right. Group. What I've done is just serve to popularize it and bring a network and energy to it. That's my piece. I don't have some skill that nobody else has ever had, but I saw the unmet or undermet need, and man, did it take off. We launched in April 1st of 2016, 250,000 people certified in the veterinary profession, 77 countries. And I'll tell you, if I'm going to look in the future, we have equine courses and avian and exotics courses, but I tell you, within 2 or 3 years, you will be eating Chobani yogurt from Fear-Free certified cows. And you will be, this sounds like an oxymoron, but you're going to be eating a Chick-fil-A sandwich from a chicken that has had a fear-free experience. It's reducing fear, anxiety, and stress in all animals.
But I think what you just said is important to catch on to, because I don't think the average person considers the direct relationship to fear and the health of the animal. So talk to me about what fear is from the inside. What hormones, what behavior? You know, I tell my client, when an animal reacts, it is a process of adrenaline and either cortisol or serotonin. And adrenaline spikes when a dog is afraid. On page 27 of your book, I'm holding it right here, Signs of Fear in Dogs. So people don't realize that the dog is always processing the sensory input from its environment, and fear can be communicated, but not through words. So yes, you bring your dog into the veterinarian and you think, oh, he's fine, he's not moving, or, oh, he's so happy to be here because he's excited. But what they don't realize is that the behavior they're seeing is a direct relationship to places, to experiences, to what they see in front of them, to what they smell. And the fear-free movement really helps people to see the experience from the dog's perspective, and to see excitement isn't always a happy dog.
Well put. So you have, how would you like to go in for healthcare thinking you're going to be harmed or killed? So back, I'm 69 years old, and I, like many people in the 50s and 60s, were manhandled, manipulated, threatened, and abused for healthcare. You're not going to be able to see
exactly.
It, but I got two-thirds of a thumb on one side because I had an abscess, and three people held me down to pull the splinter out of my thumb. My sister Cheryl, who's 12 years older than me, used to get her ponytail pulled at the dentist office to keep her mouth open. So healthcare used to be much more brutal. And the things that were tolerated in the 50s and 60s in pediatrics certainly wouldn't be tolerated today. So again, these dogs and cats have no idea why this benefits them. So they think they're going to be harmed or killed. The pet parent thinks, I don't want to hurt my pet by trying to help it because it's so miserable going to the veterinarian. But they're actually, you talked about cortisol, when they're in that fight or flight mode, and these signs, this is really interesting, Sarah, because I want to touch back on what you said about people don't recognize the signs. There's a recent study looking at signs of fear, anxiety, and stress, and most younger veterinarians do not recognize the signs. The people that are best are about 20-year veteran veterinarians, and I'll tell you, Sarah, you know this from the training field. That's something that you learn with education and experience, education, training, and experience. You start to know the subtle signs. So just for your listeners, when that dog is panting in the veterinary hospital, it's not panting because it's hot. It's stressed. When they are yawning, they're not bored. They're stressed. When they're licking their lips, when they're yawning, salivating, and then the shivering, the shaking, the panting, the leaning away, the thousand-yard stare, the tucked ears, the tucked tail, those are all signs of fear, anxiety, and stress.
What I love about this page is you literally list 40-plus signs of anxiety. So people can start to process, whoa, my dog actually is thinking, is processing. But what people need to recognize is there are five signs, you know, there are five communication modalities on the dog. It's the tail, position, it's the eyes, the mouth, the posture, the vocalization. All of that comes into play when reading, really listening to your dog. And if everybody could, if the veterinarians could be trained, if the owners could be trained, and that's where, again, we come back to fear-free, because that's what you're trying to do, is teach people, listen, you have to figure out how your dog is feeling, so how you can best react to minimize their stress.
You're going to love this, Sarah. This makes me proud. 4/5 of all veterinary schools in the United States, there's 33 schools, now require fear-free certification of all students before graduation.
That is amazing.
There's Association of Veterinary Tech Educators that represents 253 AVMA, which is the American Veterinary Medical Association accredited tech schools. Fear-free is going to be mandatory by the end of next year.
That's in under 8 years. I mean, you pulled this together in 2016, and you've changed the textbook on veterinarians communicating and understanding their patients, which is incredible.
Isn't that amazing? And there, you know, I learned in veterinary school, we stretch cats out. We were taught to restrain a cat, you grab it by the nape of the neck and their feet, back feet, and they were in two zip codes. I mean, their head was in San Francisco and their ass was in Oakland, or if you're from the East Coast, their head was in Brooklyn, their ass was in Manhattan. That's what you were trained. And so we know that harsh restraint was designed to protect people. And now we do something called gentle control, which is designed to protect the pet. But listen to this. Less is more. Banfield, the pet hospital, has been doing a study, and they're comparing 100 veterinary hospitals that do fear-free with 100 veterinary hospitals that don't in the same markets, a 50% reduction in injuries.
Fascinating.
And there's a study coming out now it's underway by University of Georgia, University of Illinois, and University of Tennessee, Colleges of Veterinary Medicine, highlighting the decrease in injuries from fear-free handling. So you'd mentioned earlier, it doesn't matter if you're a veterinary hospital, a trainer, a groomer, pet sitter, dog walker. In all aspects of their life, we need to look at their emotional well-being. And it's not so much remodeling facilities as it is remodeling your animal handling techniques.
You know, something that I do, I'm what you would call a hobby breeder. I do one puppy at a time. They're house trained before they leave. They're crate trained. They're sleep trained. And I require them reading my book, Puppies for Dummies, now in its fourth edition, and your book. And I explain to them, you know, what it is to be a fear-free, why they want to avoid disciplining their dog and how that can backfire. And I mindfully walk them through the step of positively raising their dogs, because people just don't know. They don't know what they don't know. They don't know that their dog feels. They don't know how to understand how they communicate. So many people say, well, his tail was wagging before he bit that person. And I always tell people, space and time. If your dog seems stressed, back out of that space. Give them a little time. The hyperarousal goes in a wave. And I envision a world where to own a dog, to own a cat, people are encouraged to study the fear-free techniques of raising these sweet animals before they are even given. A shelter can say, you need to read this article and explain it to them. So I'm just so excited that you were able to change the textbook with veterinarians, which is incredible. Now we need to make it a law, you know. Anyhow, I get very excited when I hear this stuff. There's hope.
Sarah, and this is not a mutual pat each other on the back session, but it's honest. We recommend your book to everybody because, like you mentioned, those five ways, a lot of people think, well, it's all body language. Well, no, it's body language, it's posture, it's vocalization. And I think there's a book that's been on the bestseller list for I don't know how many dozens of years called What to Expect When You're Expecting. So when somebody's having a human baby, they get the nursery set up. They, buy all the right, stuff.
They have 9 months to prepare.
Yeah, and we need to do more of that to get people ahead of time. And, you know, a good time, I'm not sure when this podcast will air, but if people want to know what fear, anxiety, and stress look like, think of fireworks or thunderstorms. And that's what fear, anxiety, and stress looks like. And we see that when you talked about, you know, pet parents need to know it. A lot of times, Sarah, you and I see that on a Starbucks patio. People bring their dogs and think, gosh, they're going to love getting out. Yet the dog has high levels of fear, anxiety, and stress. That's not beneficial for the dog.
Exactly. And like Karen Overall said, it imprints onto the brain that when I leave my home, I always say the home is the den, the yard is the territory, everything else is a great beyond. And if people take their dog without proper introduction, without slow and gradual steps, they just take them out into a situation, they kind of link seeing being in a crowd, being away from home as threatening. I have, I teach group classes. People always say, I want to bring my dog so he socializes with other pets. And I don't allow it. They have to sign that their dog is not aggressive with people or other dogs because you can't just throw them into a fire and expect for them to cope. And there are many dogs, I'm sure you all say this, is like they're perfectly happy in the den and at home. And they've already been too stressed leaving the home to make that a comfortable experience. You know, something you wrote in this book that I love because I feel like it's such a good metaphor is like the leash is one of the hardest things for a dog to comprehend, being tethered, being held tight, going into a veterinarian, having them hold them on a scale when they're fearful and want to get away. And I always say it's a necessary evil. I don't recommend against using a leash, but try to think how your dog is affected by your holding them tight, your asphyxiating them. And it's all these things when you describe it to people and you explain it, they can comprehend, but it's reaching them before they've done the damage is our goal, right? I mean, it's certainly your goal, and I have so much respect. I'm so excited to be talking to you, to be hearing about those early stages of fear-free. And I think of it as a glass, you know, maybe you get a nice martini or a Tom Collins. You're like the stir that brings us all together.
Well, you know what, Sarah? Nobody gets in the businesses we're in to be a pet sitter, a dog walker, a trainer, a groomer, to make life worse for animals. But we fall back on what we were trained on. And that's what's good about training people differently. And now it's time for the pet moms and dads to learn what they need to do. So let me, at the risk, I was going to be honest, okay? What people will do is I'll see an ad for Farmer's Dog. And I'll think, okay, feed my dog like you feed a human. Or people go in and get these crazy expensive foods at pet retail. And let me tell you, from a 40-year veterinarian, only thing that does for your dog is it takes a more expensive bowel movement. It does absolutely nothing more than a moderately priced, really good food that your veterinarian... And when I say that, Costco's Kirkland brand is great. Iams in the grocery store is great. I happen to feed Purina Pro Plan. What they won't do is go through those classes or read that book, or feeding their pet in a bowl and use a food puzzle or food dispensing device to feed the body and feed the mind. That's where I think you and I are talking. We've got to get them started the right way. Don't waste all your money on these super premium foods. You can get a parasite control that's moderately priced. Don't feed out of bowls. Use food puzzles or food dispensing devices. And give them those manners. Like, one of the things that we're working on, there's a new program called the Pet Adoption Gateway that's going to connect 2,000 shelters. And we'll be able to connect a point of acquisition. Every single one of those people needs a veterinarian, and they need a trainer. They might not need him at the front end. I hope they do get it at the front end, but they're going to need one. And I want them to have a relationship in their community with those two people.
Yeah, absolutely. I work with a shelter for the past 20 years or so. And I've seen a lot of trainers come and go. And I've seen certain trainers come in that use prong collars or treadmills and all this fancy gadgets that people just aren't going to have at home. And they don't even know to look at the dogs that are engaged. Their tail is down. They are maybe behaving well, but it's out of fear of punishment rather than eagerness to participate. And, you know, I know you'll agree. Like, when you play with your dog, when you love your dog, when you engage, when you put a word like belly belly to when they're upside down, it doesn't matter the words they learn. You want them to enjoy being with you. So it's a fear-free movement, you know, basically, that words, dogs are learning all the time, but are they enjoying the time spent with you? And when a dog enjoys a human, they enjoy all humans. When a dog is fearful of one human, they're unsure about every human.
Sarah, I went over to Ukraine a year ago, April, to help with the pets. I just felt that calling, like many people did, to give of their time or give of their treasure. And I wasn't going to go over and solve, so, okay, there's an elderly pet that nobody can figure out what's wrong with it. I was not going to do that. I was not going to perform some crazy orthopedic surgery on a dog that was hit by something and had a fractured pelvis. What I was going to do was talk to them about animal handling. They were seeing incredible number of dog bites. So imagine these pets coming from Ukraine across the Danube to Romania or Moldova. High levels of fear, anxiety, and stress. The people had high levels of fear, anxiety, and stress. They'd come across, they'd get into Romania, and all these well-intentioned people would rush up to them, put their hand out, and say, "Can I pet your dog? What's your dog's name?"
Face. Right.
And, yeah. So direct, prolonged eye contact, hoovering over them, put their fist right in their face, and they're getting bitten. So I was teaching them, and for anybody that's listening, you turn sideways to reduce your profile. Take a knee if you can to reduce your size. You can glance at them and call them over to you. That's the basics. And if we were to just go out randomly today in my town or your town or wherever you're listening to this at and ask 100 people, how do you approach a dog? 99 out of 100 would greet these dogs incorrectly. So that's the stuff you learn from making sure that you're a good pet parent. You don't put your pet in that position where it's going to bite and then they get removed from the home. It's easily doable. We know how to do it if you take the time to reduce fear, anxiety, and stress, and reduce fear-based aggression. Almost all the bites are fear-based aggression. And you mentioned, you know, we won't mention somebody that would intimidate dogs and cause them to become so fearful that they comply. I want to mention one thing real quick. I was on a Delta flight, and I happened to be watching two different shows on Delta. One was Brandon McMillan, usually talking about a masterclass in dog training, and the other one was Victoria Stilwell, Dogs with Extraordinary Jobs. That second one, Victoria Stilwell does an amazing job of, you know, she's a well-known trainer. And what was interesting, all these dogs, that I only saw through maybe six episodes, what did they do to reward a dog that does what they're supposed to do? It was play. It was a Kong toy. It was a tug toy. And so you mentioned that earlier, for that thing, when they do the right thing, is you reward them with play. My wife, who's a pet massage therapist, would say physical touch. Well, yeah, you can do that too. But these dogs' bodies are built for motion. They are incredibly athletic. We need to do more things like that. And this is not my words. I can't remember which person in our past, you know, it's kind of a collective knowledge, Sarah, but said a tired dog is a happy dog.
Yeah. And it's something I know we're very busy. So if you're busy, you need to find ways either that day or, you know, during the work week to engage your dog in ways that, you know, are thought-provoking and involve movement and interaction. So
there's a new product out, and I don't have a financial connection with this, okay? So I'm not a stockholder. I'm not a founder. Go to joincompanion.com. Yeah, Join Companion, and I am on the advisory board. Yeah, what this product does, it's high-tech, high-touch, state-of-the-art. So you just mentioned about you don't have time to do it. This product uses advanced cameras and motion sensors, which have become a lot less expensive due to the way they're in cars and other devices now. It trains your dog in the home, the basic, you know, sit, stay, come. Ken Ramirez, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is a very well-known trainer. Ramirez, yeah, who I think we both respect that tremendously as the head trainer for that group. But it does repetitions with perfect memory thousands of times a day. So it can train your dog. It can play with your dog. It can deliver 1% or 100% of your dog's food in a game where it has to go for each piece of kibble. It also is a diagnostic device. So as your pet is moving, whether it's under the training part or just moving to catch kibble, it can detect lameness. It looks at body condition scoring, and it's going to be a game-changing product that you can pre-order now. But I've never seen anything like here myself. I get introduced as America's veterinarian all the time, but do I have all the time to train that dog or to play with that dog when I'm exhausted at the end of the day? No. Well, the dog, you can engage with your dog. It can play with this machine.
Sometimes you just need to sit down with a glass of wine. And
yes.
So there are a couple of things I picked up on your saying. And what I think of is that for a human to love a dog, they make a sustained eye contact. They look deeply into their eyes. They might hug them to show love. And I always tell people that humans are the only mammal that see this as a positive. There's no other mammal on the planet that hugs and smiles and shows their teeth and stares deeply and amorously in each other's eyes to show love. And that for a dog, the most exciting thing that you can do is take them out on a long line, toss a ball, engage in play that's not face-to-face. That is, like you said, standing sideways to a dog. When people call their dogs, they always face them and they're very still. And I say, as you would, stand sideways, wave your arms like they're a tail. And when they're coming, run in the other direction with a toy, with some treats to throw them in play, find it, so that the dog's joy, that acceleration, that movement is sustaining. It's not run, stop, or being pulled around on a short tether.
I love what you're saying, because one, they used to have to hunt for their supper. Their bodies are built for motion, and their eyes are incredible about tracking movement. And so what you're doing, you're satiating a part of their brain by the motion and stuff that you just described. We actually, up here, we live on a horse ranch. We'll actually use a slingshot and feed part of their meal, shooting one kibble at a time, that they have to follow that kibble through the air and then fight it in the grass.
And it's funny, if being near you is fun for the dog, being near you is enriching, I find a lot of the training is just a routine. It's a routine of reconnecting. And then you can put the word come onto, you know, your reconnection, or they're running to you, so that it's not even like a harsh exercise you do. It's just the way they grew up. You know, I raised this litter of pups. There were five puppies. They all went home last weekend. And from the time they could hear, every time I walked over, I walked calmly. I said the word come. So their association to seeing somebody is to run over. Now, when they got excited, I just held back until they were all sitting. And those puppies learned come. They learned sit by a simple cause and effect that, like you said, a one-year-old would understand. I've seen a lot of breeders come in so hyper excited, and the dogs are jumping and biting each other. And that's what the puppies get attention for before they've even gone home. They are getting attention for being hyper aroused. Now, are you going to focus on fear-free breeders, or are you already doing that?
Well, we've got two programs. One is we're working with Mal Schwartz, who's a famous person in the shelter world, to work on the pet adoption gateway that's going to connect, pets at point of acquisition. But we're also working with Trupanion and working in the breeder community. Is what we'd love to do is have them add the price of a fear-free membership, kind of to get us in a portal onto just the cost of the puppy. And so these people can actually have a way that we guarantee they're going to get the information that they need. So they prepare the home before they get the pet. It's puppy's first day at home. It's house training 101, the early mistakes you see day two. And so they get the information in kind of the way they want to consume it, you know, online, short, visual, targeted to certain things, and we're excited.
Yeah, I'm so excited about that. Listen, Marty, thank you so much. I could talk to you forever. We'll have to do it again.
Well, Sarah, let's do this again. And I want to thank you for, you've been with Fear Free Friends, the early puffed fire into the sparks. And so I really appreciate everything you've done to help us with Fear Free, Sarah. Thank you.